Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your patience this morning, and I will call the meeting to order for the Conference Committee on Data Practices. Everyone should have an amendment before them. It is the 1143C amendment. What I would like to do is have staff go over the changes from yesterday. Gary?
Madam Chair, there is in your packets a sort of summary of the contents of what's in the 1143C document. I won't go through each section individually, but you can see what's each section that's in there and the section number associated. The changes from the A version of this document that...
Madam Chair?
Senator.
Could Mr. Gearing tell us what document you're looking at? So that
in the green folder.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the biggest changes since the 1143A document that was distributed at yesterday's committee hearing are three things. One is the addition of the MnDOT design build project language. That's now, you can find that in section 50 of the current document. There are some changes to the electronic licensing language that can be found in section 67. A clause that allowed disclosure for research studies was removed. In addition, some of the language was tweaked related to authorized uses for insurance companies. And then the third major change relates to the CGIP dependent audit language. Yesterday's bill had a provision that prohibited future contracts, future audits. This bill in section 64 adds new language that provides a number of conditions for that must be met by the Commissioner of Management and Budget before a person can be dropped from an enrollment. And there's a list of three or four different notice requirements that have to be met by the commissioner, like I said, before a person can be dropped as a result of an audit. And that can be found in section 64.
Thank you. Questions or comments by members? First, we'll get yours before we. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you inviting just comments on any particular section?
Yep.
Or just?
Yes, sir.
Well, if I may, Madam Chair, on the CGIP audit, just so folks know, this was the result of, I think, some consensus language. Thanks to Mr. Gearing and Mr. Reynolds and Ms. Weeks and some other staff folks and Mr. Shepard, of course, of House Research, who helped with this. I think this is a good way to put some guardrails on the process and some of the things that we talked about yesterday. I noticed that we have a letter, or at least I do, here from MMB, and I can't say that. Scrutinized every line of it, but essentially it seems to be agreeing with the guardrails idea. It's not necessarily an agreement that we ought to put it in statute, but it's an agreement that there need to be some guardrails in place. I do favor putting it in statute, and I think this is a good thing to put in the bill. The other thing, though, that I would add is it's been brought to my attention here just before the hearing that we might want to just change one term in this.
Okay.
It appears several times, and the term is employee. And the reason I'm told, and maybe others can speak to this more articulately than I can, is there are some instances where there are covered people who aren't necessarily employees. So it's been suggested to me, and this was a suggestion made by AFSCME Council 5, who looked at the statute, that maybe a more precise term would be to say a covered plan member, because there are some covered plan, there are some people who are covered who aren't necessarily employees.
Okay.
So. If it's the will of the chair to take testimony, that's fine. I'm just the messenger here. That probably is the term that we want, I'm told.
Okay. So. All right. Let's ask staff about that, Mr. Gearing and Ms. Pontius, if that sounds like the right thing to do. Mr. Gearing?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, that I guess I don't have any specific information about this section. It seems reasonable. We can go through and find the references if the committee would like to make that change.
All right. Representative Simon, would you like to move that?
I will. I will move that in section 64 of the proposed conference report, starting on line 34.6, that in instances where the term employee appears, that we substitute for that the term covered plan member. That would be my motion.
Madam Chair, could I ask our counsel in the Senate, do you agree with Mr. Gearing's assessment?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, yes.
Right.
covered that.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Members, all of those in favor of the assignment amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. And is adopted.
Madam Chair, while we're on the subject on this section, there was question of the information that would come to a private sector entity that would involve information, tax form, tax information. And we believe that we should treat that information when it leaves state government hands and goes to a private sector for analysis, that they should recognize that information the same way the government does and that it's private. Right now, I don't believe there's a specific reference in law to that, and I think Ms. Pontius may have some suggested language for that.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Ms. Pontius.
Mr. Chair, members, I have the A-10 passed down here. Literally just got it. I can explain the amendment. The problem, too, if the contractor will be under, as part of the contract, will be under the Data Practices Act, so they'll have to comply with that. The problem that was identified is that some of this data may not be private data under the Data Practices Act. In particular, for like legislative employees, the legislature isn't subject to Chapter 13. So our data going to either the vendor or the OMB would not be classified. So what this amendment that's being passed out now would do would be to classify it as private data on individuals. There is some language at the end that allows it to be shared with or used by a state agency if necessary to pursue actions arising out of apparent ineligibility. So they could use it like for fraud or disenrollment or something like that. And I think this reflects some concerns that were raised by the department with the classification. No one's had a chance to review this language yet because I just got it. But
okay. Discussion, members, if you've had a chance to read it, the amendment. I think Senator Limmer did a good job of laying out why this would be necessary.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought it was just focused primarily on tax information, but if you look down on line 17 through 22, it does go a little bit further, but it also would, it was suggested it probably would be covered by federal HIPAA law and maybe other information classified under Minnesota Data Practices Act, but we wanted to make sure and clarify it clearly.
Okay.
And that's why we have the information before us.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Ms. Pontius, given Representative Simon's amendment that we just put on regarding the covered plan member, if we go down to line 120 of your amendment, it says individuals as defined in section 1302. Given Representative Simon's amendment, are we still okay with that language?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Newman. Yeah, that's still okay because that's the data practices language, which uses the term private data individuals.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Any other discussion on the amendment? Okay, all those in favor of adopting the A-10, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Amendment is adopted. I understand that we may have some testimony here this morning from some folks that want some input. I know someone from management and budget may be here. I don't know if they want to testify on behalf of the letter that we got. Welcome to the committee way down there.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division over at Minnesota Management and Budget. And thank you again for an opportunity to continue our discussions on the privacy aspects of our dependent audit. Certainly clearly heard from the members yesterday in the committee hearing, and I think you're addressing sort of two key aspects, one being the process that's involved within the audit, the submission of forms, and the possible appeals process that may incur within should there be challenges with satisfying the documentation required, and then also the privacy piece. So I'll try to be brief. I believe you all have a copy of the letter that our commissioner is presenting to the committee. I think you'll see that it generally outlines the provisions that were part of the amendment that you had just passed. It would be our preference that that the statutes not include this kind of administrative detail. In our experience, it has caused problems down the road and has had unintended consequences. You know, our statutes sort of outline, you know, kind of generally what our broad authority is to administer the program, but usually doesn't get into this level of detail. I hope that you'll find that the letter does address precisely, I believe it was Representative Simon's amendment. We've tried to label them appropriately, 1, 2, 3, and 4, so that it's easy enough to follow. I think the oral amendment that was offered to change employee, I'm not sure the exact term that you changed it to, but I think that's precisely why we don't like these kinds of things in statutes, because there can be very technical nature to the wording, the particular words that are used. In fact, when we talk about the data privacy piece, there's another word that we need to change in there as well, because these can have very technical meanings. We clearly understand as an agency the intent of the legislature here is to provide an additional opportunity for members and perhaps additional time for members to submit their documentation. In addition, there may be instances where documentation is just not possible to obtain and wanting to have some kind of appeal process. And so that's, again, we really have used some of the same language that was in Representative Simon's amendment and tried to outline that here in the letter. But again, because these words can have very technical meanings, it's our preference with the short amount of time that we've been given to review the language and to consider all the possible challenges that it may create, it would be our preference that this letter would be deemed suitable in your eyes as a commitment from MMB that we will ensure that all members of the CEGIT program are clearly communicated what the expectations are requiring the audit, who needs to be audited, how much time they have to respond to that audit, the specific contact names of people within MMB that they can contact that can be their advocate as part of this audit process, and ultimately that the commissioner does have the level of authority necessary to make exceptions where exceptions are warranted. And so, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is our hope that that this letter will suffice, again, because we're concerned about cluttering the statutes with administrative detail like this and the unintended consequences that it may have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Morocco. I see someone has joined you at the testifiers table. Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Thorson with AFSCME Council 5. And I would I appreciate the spirit and the intent of MMB and feel they're approaching the situation in very good faith. We believe everything they've been saying and working with us on the related to the memo. We, however, would appreciate the comfort of having this language in statute as we go forward here. One of the things we like about the language that was added is in addition to providing the accommodations in situations where information is difficult or impossible to produce, it also directs employees or covered plan members to MMB as the decider, and they don't get caught in a loop between the vendor and the employer in terms of dealing with this issue. So
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could either Mr. Gehring or Ms. Pontius explain to me what the appeal process would be that is described on line 19 of the 1143C amendment? And my question does have to do with this letter.
Okay. Do you want to take a crack at that? Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I think I actually might defer to the MMB representatives that this appeal language is based on their testimony yesterday that there is some process in place, and I'm not familiar enough with how that works.
Mr. Morocco.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think our intent would be to make it known that an appeal option is available and provide the real basic, you know, contact or procedural components in that communication so that people understand that they can appeal and how to go about appealing. It wouldn't likely have all the details of the appeal itself, but it would have the resource. It would direct them to the resources within MMB and our vendor HMS to pursue the appeal itself.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the appeal be made through MMB and ultimately allow an individual to go through a contested case proceedings through OAH?
Mr. Morocco.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, you said OAH.
Office of Administrative Hearings.
Oh.
Under the Administrative Procedures Act. Is what I'm
okay.
Morocco.
Madam Chair, that wouldn't be our intent. I think what the language here is providing is that the commissioner is really kind of the final arbiter of whether or not someone has provided either the necessary documentation or there's reason to believe that those documents are not available in a timely or manner.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Given this explanation by Mr. Morocco, I guess I would respectfully disagree with his position. I think an employee or a covered plan member would, in fact, have a right to go through a contested case procedure under the Administrative Procedures Act. And the letter from Mr. Showalter, dated May 3rd, that is in our packet, albeit is helpful. I don't really think it would give someone a legal basis on which to base an appeal, but the statutory language in the 1143C amendment would, and therefore I would urge the members to go with the language that is contained in the amendment under Section 64. I think Representative Simon brought up some very good questions yesterday, and I would urge you to adopt this language.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this matter?
Madam Chair?
I'm sorry, Senator Simon, or Senator Limmer.
I'd like to go back to the A-10 amendment.
Sure.
We had heard that perhaps there was a one-word reference that may need to be corrected before we get it out. Perhaps someone from MMB or anyone else that may want to address this. This is found, if we go back to the A-10 amendment on line 21, I believe that in the language where it says a state agency might be the incorrect reference and that it should be changed to an employer. I was wondering if someone from the agency or department might be able to address that issue.
Anyone able to do that?
Well, Madam Chair,
Mr. Morocco,
Senator Limmer, so we're referring to the state agency component. So just as a point of background, the state employee group insurance program is actually made up of multiple entities, as you likely know. So we've got multiple branches of government. We've got MNSCU. We even have the Affinity Plus Credit Union in our group. And so the term state agency, again, may have a specific meaning that is unintended. And so I believe a broader term such as employer would be more appropriate in this case because we may be leaving groups out that may need to take some kind of action as a result of fraud.
Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer.
Hearing that explanation, I would move that on the A-10 amendment that we previously passed that we amend the amendment going to line 21 to remove the words a state agency and replace that with an employer.
Mr. Guerin, would you like to repeat that, please, for the record?
Madam Chair, so the amendment proposed by Senator Limmer can be reflected on the A-10 amendment, page 1, line 21, delete a state agency and insert an employer.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? All those in favor of the proposed amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. I believe we have some other testimony. Thank you, Mr. Morocco. I believe we have some other folks that want to testify. Mr. Anthonson, is he in the room? There we go. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Members, Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I am here to testify about a section of the bill I think that you talked about yesterday, and I apologize for being unable to be here. This is the electronic licensing system data at Section 66 and the side-by-side version of the bill. Basically, what that section does is allows certain entities and individuals to obtain access to the licensing data collected by the DNR when they issue hunting, fishing licenses, trail permits, snowmobile licenses, boat licenses, and things like that. And I'm here to urge the committee not to miss what is a important opportunity to restore the law on this topic to what it was for many, many decades in Minnesota. Until 2008, the public and the media were allowed largely unimpeded access to this entire database. There was no history of problems. There was no record of abuses of any kind. Because of a fluke caused purely by federal law, for a brief period of time, DNR had to classify this data as not public. 2 years ago, that legislation, that federal legislation, was eliminated. And so, in theory, this data could be public again without any federal problem. The mystery to us, speaking on behalf of the state's news media, is why the legislature would not restore the law to what it was. Let me be brief, but let me remind the legislature that government is not always the best at policing itself. And over the years, there have been innumerable examples of where the state's news media have been able to help government and doing a better job in policing itself. And I would cite using big government databases. I could go on, but I'll cite just one example where several years ago the Star Tribune found that many pilots, licensed airplane pilots who had drunk driving convictions, were nonetheless allowed to fly commercially in Minnesota. The Pioneer Press did a similar investigation with school bus drivers, finding that many school bus drivers had serious records of driving while impaired. That information comes to light only because the public and the media have access to these databases. The current version of the bill allows no public access, not even limited media access. I'm not here to suggest that you make a dramatic change in the bill by allowing public access. What I am here to ask and suggest respectfully is that you consider retaining the research exception, which the 1143C eliminates even that, and you expand it a bit to allow the agency at its discretion to permit public access to the DNR database in the same way that the Minnesota Department of Public Safety has allowed access to the driver's license database for 13 years. Driver's license data about licensed drivers in Minnesota is not publicly accessible, but the agency may allow access to certain parties or individuals, including the media, because the conclusion was reached by the legislature that it promotes public safety. It allows investigations of how the agency is working and how drivers are behaving. Why not do something equivalent for DNR data? You could easily add this to allow the commissioner, at the commissioner's discretion, to permit access to the media if it advances and promotes public safety, which is what you do now with driver's license data. So that's my appeal. I am perplexed. Again, this wouldn't open it up to public access. It would limit mischievous uses of the data. But there's no question, as it does with driver's license data and people who drive on the roads, this would promote public safety with almost no downside.
Thank you.
So that is my appeal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Anfinson. Any members have any questions for Mr. Anfinson on this issue? Senator Limmer.
Mr. Anfinson, I don't know if you're speaking for the purposes of a reporter wanting information, but if I could bring you to page 35.26, there's a reference, paragraph 3. It says, for the use in normal course of business, by a legitimate business or its agents. Would a reporter be able to fit into that definition of a legitimate business or an agent of one?
Mr. Anfinson?
Well, that's a good question, Mr. Chairman. We're going to stipulate for purposes of the discussion today that the news media are legitimate businesses, and I'm happy to do that. It might, but what I seek to do with legislation, as you know, Senator, is to the extent possible, it's not always perfectly possible, to reduce ambiguity and to increase clarity. That might work, but it might not. What I'm seeking here is something, as I say, that would be closely parallel to what the Department of Public Safety already does and has done for 13 years. And thus the experience and the forms and the criteria that public safety has used to permit certain people, including reporters, to have access to private driver's license data would easily apply to DNR data, and it would give guidance to the agency based on experience. But so your proposal is not without merit at all. It might work. I'm just trying to do something clearer.
Senator Loomer, follow up?
I don't know.
Okay. Mr. Anfinson, do you have proposed language for this? Okay.
Madam Chair, remarkably, I do.
Somehow I figured that. Would you like to just tell us what that is orally?
Well, here is what I – thank you, Madam Chair, and here is what the language is. It closely mirrors language already found in Minnesota Statute Section 171.12, Subdivision 7A, which applies to driver's license data, which is classified generally as private, but access is allowed if it's for certain narrow purposes. The language I have picked up from there would allow DNR licensing data to be accessed where the use is related to the physical safety or security of operators, vehicles, pedestrians, or property. And that's almost exactly what you find in the statute for driver's license data now. And I emphasize that, and if you add that, you also retain the protection for purposes of privacy concerns, that the predicate for this whole section of the bill is the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources may disclose. So there's an element of discretion that I really, frankly, detest, but I am willing to accept for purposes of balancing what are important issues, privacy and public access.
Thank you, Mr. Anfinson. I'm going to have Mr. Gehring repeat that back to us for the record.
So, Madam Chair, the language proposed by Mr. Anfinson would be, I believe, a new Clause 8, which would be inserted on page 36 after line 14, which would read Clause 8, where the use is related to the physical safety or security of operators, vehicles, pedestrians, or property. And then in addition to the amendment, we'd make some other technical changes to make sure that the grammar and the other minor changes are updated.
I'd like to have someone from the DNR come forward and just testify as to whether they're in agreement with this or not. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources.
The recall kind of thing.
Just looking at Chapter 171, language that was discussed, and how I'm trying to figure out how a fishing license would be related to physical safety or security or a hunting license, I mean, a boat registration license. Things like that. I'm trying to figure out how this language would be applied for somebody to actually access that data and what the purposes of that are. And I don't know the answer to that question right now.
Mr. Anfinson, do you have an answer?
I do have an answer. Again, you will not be surprised to hear. There are two parts to the answer very briefly. One, I do think if use or operation is related to the safety or security of property, fish are state property. for example, and many other natural resources are state property. Abusive use of that property could theoretically fit in. More importantly, though, my answer is as follows. The commissioner would retain discretion to disclose this or not. It doesn't say shall disclose. It says may disclose. And my I have learned over the years that the cases in which people may want to look at data maintained by government agencies is so diverse, myriad, and complicated, you can never predict in advance what it all will consist of. So let the requester, such as my client, make a case that there's a safety factor. It may well be that there will never be an investigation of data involving fishing licenses related to public safety. I can accept that. But how about snowmobiles or boat licenses or hunting licenses? Maybe there is something there. The database is too diverse and complicated to simplify it by a one-size-fits-all rule. That's why I'm comfortable with allowing some discretion where the agency gets the final say.
Representative Simon has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as I understand the language, this new Clause 8, which would come after line 36.14 on this 1143C amendment, as I understood it, as Mr. Gehring repeated back, it starts with the language about where the use is related to X, Y, and Z. But I think we should toy with adding, at the beginning of that, words to the effect of at the discretion of the commissioner, comma, where. Oh, is that in there already? Okay.
Mr. Gehring, would you like to address that?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, the discretion, I think, is already kind of implied in the language on page 35, line 20. It's a may be disclosed rather than a shall be disclosed, so that is the discretionary language for the commissioner.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to add that the statute 171.12.7a has a paragraph in it following the possible disclosure of the driver's license language. Mm-hmm. And it says the commissioner may refuse to disclose data under this subdivision when the commissioner concludes that the requester is likely to use the data for illegal, improper, or non-investigative purposes. We could consider adding that kind of language if it would give members some kind of comfort. I would also think that Mr. Amphenson has got a point when it comes to public safety for it. Just as an example, if a convicted felon applies for a hunting license and is granted a hunting license, obviously the convicted felon can't carry a gun. That could conceivably be something that would play into the public safety issue. So just a couple of thoughts. Madam Chair.
Mr. Amphenson, your comments on the addition of that language.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Newman's suggestion is an excellent one that gives the agency some comfort level. I should have suggested that myself, and I neglected to do so. But yes, in theory, the commissioner has a discretion anyway for the reason Mr. Gehring just described, but it doesn't hurt to cement and emphasize that to make it clear what some of the factors are to be considered. So I think that's a great idea.
Okay. Should we have staff work on that? Some language of what? Mr. Gehring, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I can work with Ms. Pontius and find some language that will work appropriately appropriate reconcile Senator Newman's suggestions.
Okay. All right.
I just don't see how this does it.
I could change your mind. I could change your mind, but I could fill you in. The experience with the driver's license data show.
DNR, folks. Mr. Meyer, do you have any other comments on this?
Madam Chair, members, I think the suggestion from Senator Newman is a good one to add that piece in there. The example he cites highlights the complicated nature of this data, where a convicted felon is not allowed to possess a firearm, But for purposes of deer hunting, that person is allowed to buy a deer license and to participate within a hunting party, since there's party hunting allowed for deer. So he can possess a deer without actually shooting that animal. So it's this data that we have is a very unique set of information that the state manages. And the more our main concern is the more complicated that we make it, the more we set the system up for failure. And we want to keep a straightforward process where this is or is not disclosed. I mean, discretion is something that people like, but we actually like on this set of data to have a kind of black and white what should or shouldn't be disclosed. So those are some of our major concerns.
Ms. Beyer-Kopinski, would you want to come to the table and just give us feedback from admin's point of view on this? Go ahead and state your name for the record, please. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members Lori Beyer-Kopinski, Department of Administration. I'm not exactly sure how you'd like me to the carving out another exception. This is clearly based off of the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, the federal law, and that is not the best model that in many instances Minnesota has used, since it makes it accessible to many more people but not the whole public. So that's really the policy decision for you to decide. But whether or not you add another, you know, kind of another 10 exceptions to who can get this data for what purpose. Many government entities, as Mr. Myers just highlighted, don't want discretion. They want to be able to see clearly who, how, what data goes out and when. And the discretion is something that they don't particularly want. They want clear. clear.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for any of the Mr. Anfinson?
If I may just briefly discuss, Madam Chair, the discretion issue. I appreciate the concern that imposed on the agency, and sometimes with very specific categories of data, let's take personnel data on government employees, you can be extremely specific in data privacy statutes and giving the agency and its staffers guidance. But there are some contexts where the data is too complicated and diverse to effectively do that without doubling the length of the Data Practices Act, which nobody wants to do. And I would just reiterate that with the Department of Motor Vehicles and the largest database the state maintains, which is motor vehicle registration data, which involves almost every resident of the state of Minnesota, they have managed this on a discretionary basis with the language we're talking about, basically, for more than 10 years, and I have heard no complaints or problems. And meanwhile, there have been many examples of highly valuable investigative reports based on the limited access to that data. So it is a balancing. But this, there are some real benefits that come out of this, too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Lemmer.
Madam Chair, Mr. Anfinson, in the suggested language that you've been talking about, would the requester be specifically categorized on who could request this information? Or would it be anyone that could request this category of information?
Mr. Anfinson.
Madam Chairman, Senator Lemmer, I think it probably could be anyone, and I think that's a simpler approach. But what Department of Public Safety has done during the time period I've discussed with their databases, they have developed a form in which you, before you can have any chance of access or pursue your request, you have to make a series of very specific representations about who you are and what you intend to do with the data, and that your intended use complies with the statutory restrictions. It's a written representation, and that again seems to work pretty well.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, Mr. Anfinson, would there be, obviously there's going to be some front desk person that's going to be reviewing that information on a form. Will they have any discretion to deny or that individual based on what they put on the form? Or is the form just a means to record a request and for a perceived need, and that we just put it in a box somewhere? Is there a discretion for that individual to refuse that information based on that scenario?
Mr. Anfinson.
Madam Chair, Senator Lemmer, I, the way that it works with driver's license data is the form is filled out, and then somebody within the agency with the power of discretion reviews it and determines if it's appropriate or not and if it should go forward. But again, I think that in your example, I think the person at the front desk would, in theory, have discretion to deny the request. I mean, again, I'm not a fan of discretion from the other side of public access, but I accept it in certain difficult cases as a means of making progress without having to be perfect. And so I think yes, the person at the desk could exercise her or his discretion or reject that form, and then you'd go to square two.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Anfinson, in the suggested language that you offer, could one request a list of individuals that are held by the department, or would it be an individual-by-individual basis? Because I think that's the confines of what this bill has.
Mr. Anfinson.
Senator Limmer, I think it could be either. And again, I draw on my experience, quite extensive experience, with the motor vehicle database. Occasionally, some of the bigger media organizations will request what they informally refer to as a full dump, which is the entire database subject to these restrictions. And they use that to examine certain issues, but that's pretty rare. More commonly, someone will ask for access to the names and information about specific individuals. But I will tell you, when that happens, it will raise a question as to whether it's an appropriate request. And if you go back to the language Senator Newman proposed, people asking just about specific individuals could well be a request that triggers a denial because it's not obvious as to why you want that.
Could I ask counsel for a clarification? Ms. Pontius, in this bill that we have before us, in the release of any information in this category, weren't we trying to keep the data on an individual basis rather than a list deployment? Do we have anything to restrict it?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, I think it kind of varies depending on the category of permissible uses, where some of them would clearly be an individual inquiry, like, for the business purpose, in order to verify the accuracy of information submitted by an individual. So obviously that would be an individual inquiry. And I think most of these would be the recall language, like under Clause 2, that might be more a list where they'd say who has this type of boat where there's been a recall or something along those lines. So right. It would depend on the use.
But Ms. Pontius, in the suggested language that Mr. Anfinson is offering, he believes that this request could be given in the form of an individual or a mass list, depending on what that subject is about. And are we limiting the discretion of the person behind the desk at the agency to make that decision in his language, or is it something that we're writing into the bill right now?
Ms. Pontius.
Because I don't see it in the bill or in the suggested language.
Madam Chair, members, I think I agree with Mr. Anfinson. It could be on either basis. I mean, the overlying thing, though, is that all these releases are discretionary with the commissioner.
All right.
Further questions or comments by the members? Okay. We're kind of trying to stall here a little bit until staff comes up with some language for us. So if you can bear with us. Mr. Gearing, go ahead.
Madam Chair, so I think I have some proposed language that would address Senator Newman's suggestion.
What is your issue?
So this amendment would be a new sentence that would appear after the previously adopted new Clause 8. So in the bill, it would go page 36, line 14, after the period. And it would read, the commissioner must not disclose data under this paragraph if the commissioner concludes that the requester is likely to use the data for an improper or other purpose not authorized by this paragraph.
Okay. I see members shaking their heads. All those in favor of adopting that language, please signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
same. I'm sorry. Those opposed say no. Amendment is adopted. Any further testimony in the room?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. What we will do then from here is we will have these changes incorporated. Okay.
We have another amendment.
Oh, we do have one more amendment. Yes, we do. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, there was a reference by MMB to or the administration on a particular sunset of a provision, and I think council has a suggested language for it, and if council could repeat it, we can
Mr. Chairman and members, working off of the, on page 34, line 26 of the conference can report after the period insert paragraph. So, yeah, I'd have to make the first part, excuse me, on 34.7, make that paragraph A, and then after line 26, have a paragraph B, which would say this section expires on January 1, 2014.
Thank you. Senator Limmer, what can you give us a little background on that?
Madam Chair, since it's a request by the administration, I'm going to ask someone from the department to come forward and explain it.
Madam Chair, members of the committees, again, thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on this. Again, the concern that we're trying to address here is that we don't fully understand what our needs are going to be long-term regarding dependent audits. Our current contract with HMS runs through December 31st, 2013. Clearly, what we're hearing from the legislature is that they want a process in place as it relates to the current audit. And so we're just simply suggesting that this be sunsetted so that we're not necessarily bound to a certain structure, going forward. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any of the questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Morocco. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morocco, thanks for your flexibility on this. I know you'd prefer not to have statutory language. This sounds like a good compromise, which I'll support. I just want to say, since my colleague, Representative Holberg, isn't here, and she'd probably say it if she were here, I hope that next time, if there's an audit of this kind, there can be a little collaboration just so we don't get into this situation before. I do realize that you feel as if the agency is in somewhat of a box because we, the legislature, authorized this as part of the getting out of the shutdown. So I understand that you have to do what's enacted, but I think just for next time, I don't think we have to put cooperation in statute. There's no need for that. But I just hope that next time, whoever's here next year or the year after that, we don't go down this road again, and we make sure that the authority is clear and all the rest. I think that was a particular point of importance to Representative Holberg. So she'll be happy with me for saying it.
Thank you,
well said, Representative Simon. Any further comments before we?
I have renewed my motion.
Senator Limmer renews his motion to add this amendment
as specified
by council. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. And members, we will have circulating at some time this point today the revised conference report, and we'll have you sign off on that as it comes on.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I would like to move the conference report
known as
1143C as amended. Be recommended to pass.
Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, members, thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. Thank you to the staff who's worked really hard on this. So we are adjourned.